You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Good morning. Welcome to this week's edition of the Yarra Basket User Group Radio Show on 3CR Radical Radio. We're proud to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which we broadcast. People-powered radio and Yarra Basket User Group Radio, we're a show that's been on 3CR since 2008, and we're about urban mobility, micro-mobility, things further abroad, adventures, advocacy, and kind of that other bit of cycling that doesn't make the news unless someone's... Anyway, my brain just went off on a riff about the Winter Olympics and I just can't think of anything in there about our chosen form of mobility. But anyway, yeah, we're about active transport and getting around without a combustion engine, and these days it seems to be more and more tilted towards... the e-bike and other permutations thereof, as is just thinking up in Darebin. They've just seen the rollout of Lime e-bikes and e-scooters. Now, Streets Live Darebin have published some stuff about that, and also you can go to the City of Darebin website and find out more about that. But invariably, you know, people are going on about the outlier things where it's up to you, dear listener, or people you know, to, you know, if you see something you don't like, you don't see something positioned where it should be, contact. I think there's a dedicated email for this. I think it's micromobility or something like that at Darebin with all the domain after it. So look it up, send them a polite email, and all these sort of things, it's up to all of us to improve, you know, that thing of we should improve society somewhat. Thank you to Democracy Now for last hour of current affairs. If I did not back announce that correctly, apologies. On today's show, I'm going to be chatting to regular guest Jeremy Lawrence from Streets Alive Yarra, and they've done a bit of a scorecard on what our local council have been up to in the last year, and we discussed that and a few other issues, including the looming issue of Elizabeth Street. There's something going to possibly happen tomorrow night at council meeting, and we've got up on our website a letter that has been sent to Gabriel Williams, who is the relevant minister in these matters to do with active transport. And this is kind of asking for a request to have a look at actually having proper guidelines for minimum standards and the like for protected bike lanes, just like they do in other places in Australia. We'll have a chat about that in a moment, all the broad issues around thereof. Now, you may have heard about a Melbourne institution. The Melbourne Roubaix isn't going ahead, which is a bit sad. I can understand from, you know, Andy's point of view and everyone who brings this amazing event here. Sometimes you just need a break. If you've seen this on Insta, it didn't really go into the details. But look, the people put on, in terms of volunteer stuff and things and organisational things, it's something I dabbled in for many years in terms of event management. It's really hard stuff. And again, people really love and enjoy the institution that is Melbourne Roubaix. But I do believe if you really, 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 really want to do something similar to this, I think Footscray Cycling Club are putting on something in March that they've been doing out west. I'll put a bit more details into that in the podcast description. My apologies, my phone just went nope and did that horrible refresh and pause. And yeah, don't you love technology? Okay, so I might have a bit more news and events after the interview. I'll see how I go for time. But up next, I'm going to be chatting to Jeremy from Streets Alive. Yeah.
Public transport's great.
What's not great is that unless you've got a radio with you, you can't listen to 3CR when you're on it.
Until now, the Community Radio Plus app lets you listen to us wherever you are.
Get on board and search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
Today on Yarra Bicycle Users Group Radio on 3CR, and I'm having a chat to Jeremy Lawrence from Streets Alive Yarra, and we're having a little chat about report card on the, not new, but you know, they've had a year of Yarra Council. Jeremy.
Hi Chris, and thanks for inviting me back.
Okay, so a new council was elected in October 2024. I'm just reading from a paragraph here that you've got is the intro. And now that a year has passed, let's look back on who was elected, what scores we have given them, and how they perform for freedom, equality, social justice, responsibility, and a world of beauty, i.e. building more beautiful, livable, and accessible city by investing in walking, biking, trees, and placemaking.
Oh, thanks, Chris. Look, you know, councillors can behave in different ways before an election and after election. So it's perfectly normal for people to try and raise their profile by saying a few things that are a little bit on the edge, a little bit to get publicity. And then after they get elected, they might go back to the centre and govern a bit more responsibly. That's what I had hoped with our newest council. But sadly, that doesn't seem to have occurred.
It does seem very, I don't know, from someone who's trying to keep an eye on it, it seems quite erratic. Some of their decision-making processes.
Not only erratic, but perhaps a bit sad. So we had a look, of course, at all the candidates before the election and had given them a score between a maximum possible of 2 green ticks all the way down to a worst possible of 2 red crosses. And now that, as you say, we've had this latest council for just over a year, we had a look back to see what scores we had given them and compared that with how they've behaved, in other words, how they've voted over their first year. Unfortunately, it seems that our predictions, our negative scores have been borne out.
Okay, so do you want to go through a bit of how they've performed?
For example, in our assessment, 6 of the 9 councillors formed a voting block, and over the first year they voted to cancel the park outside Richmond Library. They voted to narrow the Elizabeth Street bike lanes in order to bring back parking. And they voted to cancel most of the intersection treatments that had been intended to improve safety for people biking. These are all quite significant changes from previous policies.
Very much so, because a lot of people would not be aware that, like the 7 intersection changes that were put up, they've just gone, no, this was brought up back in August. That was August, July, that was out for consultation. And there's been pretty poor communication from council of just like, yeah, we'll put this out and then no. And the greater community be waiting on, okay, when do things commence? Or when do we have some proposals or changes? And it's just no.
Yeah, it's a bit unfortunate, a bit sad. The Yarra's population is going to increase a lot, perhaps double before 2050. In accordance with the state government's housing targets. And that's a good thing overall, giving a lot more people the opportunity to live close to the city, close to jobs and services. And for that to happen in a way that's livable so that everyone can get around, we simply have to accept the fact that not everyone is going to be able to drive a car at the same time on our streets because geometrically, not everyone can fit. So we have to invest.
That's the point that kind of gets missed in the some of the really odd and almost strangulated arguments of, I will drive my car wherever I see fit. And it's just like, well, I'm sorry, there's simple things of contested space and physics. It can't do that. It's got nothing to do with politics. It's physical space.
Yeah, it's primary school level understanding of geometry. Here at Streets Alive Yarra, we support freedom of movement and access for people who wish to use any mode of transport, whether that be walking or biking or public transport or driving and parking. So we would like it to continue to be drivable and parkable in the city of Yarra. And for that to occur, we need to have policies in place that avoid severe traffic congestion and that avoid severe parking congestion. And the simple reality that we see from other big, successful, thriving cities around the world is to maintain drivability and parkability, you have to invest in other modes of transport so that people who are willing to give a go with those, such as walking and biking, can do so, which frees up more space for those who wish to drive and park. It can be a win-win.
Forests are essential ecosystems, mitigating for climate breakdown, cooling the planet, and preserving the wondrous diversity of life. Yet, they are being destroyed at an alarming rate. Here in the Kulin Nations, logging continues, increasing risk of both fires and floods. The Bob Brown Foundation is calling a national day of action, the March in March for Forests. In Naam, join us on Sunday, the 22nd of March at 11 a.m. in Parliament Gardens to demand the protection for native forests. Go to marchforforests.org for all the details, including how to volunteer. March for Forests, Sunday, the 22nd of March at 11 a.m.
A 3CR supporter.
Bring something back here. We're talking about one of the council parks. Of there was a fair bit of work done around this in the community on Charlotte Street in Richmond, and pretty large community petition and the rest of it. And then the, as you just said, you know, we got a new council group and they blocked it and stopped it. Now, in the last week, I'm just going to read this headline from Real Commercial. City of Yarra wages concrete jungle war with a 4.9 million park spree. An Aussie council is on a multi-million dollar property buying spree as they wage war for a reason that is shocking the community. That is really weird stuff.
It's very odd headline. Like, council does do good things. In terms of our report card, I guess the key point is whether a different set of councillors would have done the same thing or whether this council is in any way different. My view of that topic is that the Wangaratta Street land acquisition, where council purchased land from VicTrack in order to expand green open space, that's a good thing. And similarly, building the park outside Richmond Library is also a good thing. So all of the same principles apply. If you're going to double the population, then we need new and expanded pockets of green open space dotted around the municipality. Mm. And so they should have done both.
Yeah, well, it just seems like a bit of a lack of coherent vision, really. It's like, are you for community-led proposals? Or, as I said earlier into the introduction, it's quite erratic decision-making processes.
Well, a simple explanation is that it's grievance politics.
Yes,
there were councillors who candidates who wished to get elected, and they sought out topics that could be exploited for division, and that's not really a good thing in the community when we're meant to be gathering, governing for the whole, for everyone. And the Charlotte Street Park was caught in that crossfire.
Yeah, that was a very odd one, and I don't think that is completely played out in terms of either its impact or how the greater community now view that councillor group of they just slammed the door shut and we're not listening to anybody, despite a whole bunch of processes that went on. I mean, like, I can say that, just to go off track a little bit, I'm just looking at some stuff for Derebin. They got their Group C thing out for, you know, just for 20 community-led proposals. So, like, they open a process where people can give feedback for an area of Derebin, and then later they come back and say, here's 20 proposals. And then now they've got that open. I'm not saying this is the way to go, because Derebin itself, if you've been watching that too, are quite remiss on actually following up on community projects. They really are quite behind on actually delivering what the community has asked for. Now, where I'm going with this is, one, of processes within councils, and two, is it because we've got, obviously, you know, the rate cap impositions and cost of living, and that's a really diabolical argument to get into. Plus, we're seeing, as you said just now, the rise of grievance politics and or some pretty short-sighted things where people are forgetting neutrality when they come to make a vote or look at, you know, this is broader thing of, like, people, regardless whether it's Yarra or another council. I mean, what is it, 700-odd LGAs of that variety across Australia? there's a question on notice if I've got the number right. Are some of these people the best possible candidates to get voted in? You know, and most people would be like, oh, have I got a story from you about talking about the local council or shire about people making interesting decisions?
You've raised a few points. Here at Streets Live Yarra, we're supportive of democracy, so we councillors should be elected. And it's fair enough, I think, for the electorate to say, well, we gave one set of councillors a go, and maybe we'll give another set of councillors a go because they've raised some points, some concerns about what happened in the previous term, and they think they can do it better. That's okay. However, we have to moderate that and say councillors, once elected, still have to govern the best interests of the community as a whole. And we can't make the claim that on Charlotte Street, for example, the councillors didn't listen to anybody. They certainly listened to a cohort. And my point is that the cohort who were against the Charlotte Street Park outside Richmond Library was a small cohort of people who lived within predominantly around the next street over on Elm Grove. Mm. Mm. Whereas if councillors were, in my view, following their obligation to govern for the community as a whole, they should look at the community collects around Richmond Library, which is like a catchment area of 2 kilometre radius around, which instead of a few hundred people on Elm Grove, it's more like 15,000 people in the Richmond Library catchment area. And those people would have all, a broader population would have all benefited.
Yeah, I just can just say from an anecdotal thing of like just broader disappointment from people I know who live just what you've described of just like they thought works were going to start happening and nothing. And when they do whatever, you know, you look up or call your local council, they find out, that is, again, pretty poor communication and very poor public relations.
Yeah, a lot of people have participated in the multi-year process to consider the opportunity to create a new park outside Richmond Library, and it was abruptly cut off. Some could say, like, with a summary judgment at one of the first council meetings. And we should contrast the costs and benefits with differing approaches to creating new green open space in Yarra. For example, you raised the Wangaratta Street Park. That was a land acquisition where council purchased land from Victrac for millions of dollars. Alternatively, the Richmond Library Park council had control over that land. It was the council street, so they had the land for free. So in terms of costs and benefits, while both are good, the Charlotte Street Park would have generated a lot more benefit per dollar than the Wangaratta Street. And so while we say both should have progressed, the Richmond Library Park should have been priority number one.
Yeah, and what this kind of comes back to is a lack of confidence from the greater community, you know, around that area towards council. And I just don't see that as a net positive, even if it is grievance politics and people who voted believe really, you know, implicitly in what they did was the right thing. It doesn't really engender like confidence or support that you're being listened to, or confidence in, you know, going to council with any other suggestions or options or participating in that matter. What's the point in doing these consultation processes? More well familiar with them, whatever council you live in, you know, you've got your say, various permutations thereof. What's the point when you just from, you know, you're just an interested local and you just see like, oh, it just seems to be a small cohort of people going, nah. And I know it's pretty general, but that's what it feels like to people who, you know, we've all got busy lives and we've got a limited amount of time that we can plug in our interest or our concentration on these things.
One Nation is surging in the polls. March for Australia is on our streets. We urgently need to build an anti-racist movement to counter this wave of hate. That's why the Refugee Action Collective has called a forum at Trades Hall on Wednesday, the 25th of February at 6:30 p.m. We'll hear from refugees and migrants, Jews and Muslims, unionists, Greens and Labor. Together we can resist the racists. Be there. Details on RAC's Facebook page. Refugee Action Collective is a 3CR supporter.
It's fair enough for candidates to go to an election and say that they're going to govern for everyone and bring council back to the basics and use common sense. It's just unfortunate when that doesn't happen. So if people had empathy for other types of people, such as the children who can't drive a car, or older people who have aged out of driving a car, or younger people who would like to ride their bikes to work instead of having the burden, the cost burden of owning and operating a car. These are all basic common sense things, principles that an elected representative that was governing for everyone should take into account. But unfortunately, they've done the opposite. They've cancelled intersection treatments and chosen to narrow the Elizabeth Street bike lanes, which don't benefit these cohorts of people, these growing cohorts of people for which we should have empathy and consideration for.
I think we've actually discussed this really well without throwing the N-word around, which is, you know, people with property interests, which, you know, we'll just leave that alone. Again, you were just saying about different groups being able to use their space. Yarra, like most inner city places, again, as we said earlier in the discussion, you've got a limited amount of space. And how you negotiate the use of that ensures whether it's people find that a fantastic place to live or hellish. We're at a really interesting make or break period in Yarra's history. Well, again, it only goes back 30 years because of the council amalgamations, because it used to be a whole bunch of littler suburbs and probably a very much different community, because I know if you've looked at some of the stuff for the early 90s, the suburbs that now make up Yarra were incredibly poor in terms of income. And, you know, when they did the council amalgamations, 96 earlier, Elphington was done as a rates grab because it was actually seen as more affluent. Now, Yarra is one of the richest parts of Melbourne.
Look, things change, even though cities are permanent and need to be governed for a future that we could consider as perpetuity. It's reasonably easy to say that we all want a beautiful, livable and accessible city. The disagreements start to occur as, well, how does that look like on the ground? How much space do we allocate to this or to that? We've seen changes occur in other big cities around the world, whether that be London or Paris or even New York. And as has been discussed on this show previously with other guests, a key aspect of that is density. I mean, how many people do you have living in a certain area that are all competing for that space? And these really big cities that I've mentioned, they turned to walking and biking, public transport, a lot more in the last few years. But one could also make the case that they're further along on their density journey. So they are like what Melbourne will be in 10 years. Mm. So we can have understanding that we may not be there yet, that people who at present do drive and park and want that to be maintained, they may also have empathy for younger people or older people or people who wish to walk, bike or use public transport. But they might say, look, I see where you're going, but just not quite yet. And so it may be that we simply have to wait a few more years for our population density to increase. Political crunch really occurs.
Well, the population density is an interesting one because you see a lot of pushback on that. And it's for reasons that are quite valid to the person who's saying that, without getting into some of the more outlier and unpleasant things of that. But if the reason why people want to live in areas like Yarra is the amenity, the accessibility to work and all those fantastic things like cafes, the facilities, all the rest of it, you can't have that without density. Because if you want your barista, and I'm using the, you know, it's a cliche, but if you want all these services, these people have got to be able to afford to live near you. But you've got to have that mix. Everyone wants to live in Richmond because of its accessibility, but you can't all have a car park because it's simple or space that can't allow that. It's got nothing to do with politics.
Politics is real, and we are discussing the politics of public space, and that is an issue that can be discussed between reasonable people in good faith.
Yeah, that's it.
And we do ask and expect a little bit more of our elected representatives. So whilst it may be true that significant cohorts of the population want driving and parking to remain free and unimpeded as it always has been, we expect our elected councillors to think through these issues a little bit more closely and a little bit more in depth, with having regard to the reports that are provided to them by officers, by experts, and to come to a slightly different conclusion, to lead the electorate, to lead the voters and say, look, we understand where you're coming from. We are like you. However, this is the reality. And look, these are other cohorts of the population, which could be your niece or your cousin or your aunt, who do want to get around using other ways. And it's simple human, intrinsic human values to support that, to invest a little bit more in intersections and bike lanes, pocket parks.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air. Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
Go to 3cr.org.au or call 03 9419 8377.
Now, to pivot to the looming issue of Elizabeth Street bike lanes. It's coming up again at the council meeting on Tuesday night, which is the 10th of February. There's some stuff in the council agenda about this, and it's not good.
Well, council have resolved to narrow the Elizabeth Street bike lanes so they can bring back more parking. And they've received advice from officers that they need to prepare a formal set of plans and submit that to the state government for approval before putting it out to tender. And the agenda documents say that those issues have been resolved and it should now be able to go out to tender. And so really the state government is the last opportunity to prevent this from happening, the degradation of the Elizabeth Street bike lanes. Previously, the state government has indicated that it's unwilling to step in and mix in with or interfere with local government politics. There are state roads and there are council roads, and they're happy to let the democratic process play out within council. However, there is something the state can do, which is to publish guidelines on how to design and build bike lanes that are on strategic cycling corridors. In other words, some type of statutory design guidance. One example of that is what we see in other states, such as New South Wales or South Australia or Tasmania. They have bike lane design guides, which are much more specific and explicit compared with Australian standards. They say, for example, that bike lanes should be 2 meters wide and be protected with a curb so that people who are cycling don't get obstructed by car doors that are opening suddenly, or simply just don't get crashed into by people who are driving. And the Victorian state does have a guide such as this. It's called the Cycling Guide. They commissioned it as a set of movement and place design guides, and they have got the drafts, but they've just for some reason chosen not to adopt them. So this is something the state could do. The minister could simply release it, adopt it, and require councils to comply with it, meaning that the Elizabeth Street bike lanes couldn't be narrowed.
And also to bring in state government abiding guidance for 30-kilometre zones that councils can do. And also, can I just bring in a historical precinct that going back, if you've been listening to the show for a few years, was it Lisa Neville, when she was in Victoria Parliament, the Mallop Street Green Line, when Geelong Council were playing games down there, and the state did kind of say to, the state government said to council, you're not going to do this, you're not going to rip this up, or you're not going to interfere with it. So it does exist where state government can go to a council if you're receiving funding or if you're going against actual guidelines. And the other thing I want to bring in here, what does not fill me with confidence of what City of Yarra have done is they're actually going against a whole bunch of safety and public liability stuff in there as well. It does not fill me with, it does not give me any confidence in what the council's actually all voted upon.
Council is the roads, is the responsible authority for that street, for that road. So they have been presented with reports. And so one can make the case that they have made a decision after having consideration for the things that they should take into account. That's maybe something we disagree with. However, a distinct change would be if the state put out design guidelines, required councils to comply with them, then there wouldn't be any two ways about it. If it's a strategic cycling corridor, you can't drastically narrow it. That just wouldn't be.
And you would know that just recently, last few days, that Infrastructure Victoria have kind of brought out some guidance and or suggestions of what they like to see with cycling corridors, and I think SECs as well.
Just visit our website, streetsaliveyarra.org, and there's a Contact Us page on that website. We look forward to hearing from you.
Yarrabug would like to thank Bicycle Network for their financial support. Bicycle Network, a not-for-profit with 45,000 members, working to get more people riding for their health and well-being. Bicycle Network is proud to sponsor the Yarrabug program and support its important advocacy for safer and more accessible riding. By becoming a Bicycle Network member and or participating in one of their iconic riding events, you're supporting Bicycle Network's Ride to School programs and advocacy campaigns to make it easier for everyone to ride a bike every day. Visit bicyclenetwork.com.au for more information.